go.
Welcome to the podcast. I am photographer Sid Caesar.
And I am designer Dave Say.
And welcome. Happy holidays. Happy New Year.
Happy Star Wars, miss.
Happy Star Wars. Yeah, so we just passed Christmas, and today is Monday, December 28th.
December 28th.
A couple of more days left of 2015, and then we're on into 2016. But that doesn't matter because Star Wars is here. It now lives amongst us. It lives in our hearts.
No, it's possible everyone is sick of Star Wars by now. Do you think that's even possible?
I don't think so.
Yeah, no one we care about is sick of it anyway.
Exactly.
Except my sister. She was not excited about about going and seeing it. I said, "Hey, you want to go see Star Wars?" And I was met with, like, I guess a measure of indifference.
Wow.
I know. That's her boyfriend crazy. Didn't want to see it either.
That's extra crazy.
It's nuts.
Well, we stayed away from the initial first couple of days of release because it had, what did it have, like $100 million in pre-sale tickets? Like,
yeah,
it was just
like
nuts. So I just assumed that every theater in the known universe was going to be sold out for, you know, like, I mean, people were, it was like sold out for like the 8 o'clock a.m. shows. Like, it was just sold out everywhere. So we waited until the next week, and we got a 12 p.m. noonday matinee of it.
It was still pretty crowded.
And it was still pretty crowded. It was
pretty late, and they couldn't find seats.
Yeah.
They had to sit next to strangers.
And is it busting all sorts of records?
Yeah, it just passed $1 billion.
Did it really?
Yeah, it broke the record.
In like a week and a half.
Previously held by the Jurassic
World.
Yeah, Jurassic World, hit the $1 billion revenue mark in 13 days.
Wow.
Star Wars did it in 12.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Big money.
$1 billion.
$1 billion in like 12 days.
And I was reading the, so the two main characters, Daisy and Finn, they got.
John they got a Bodega.
Yeah, and Daisy Ridley. They got something like a it's like they were paid $400,000 for making the movie.
Yep.
But they also got like 0.2% of all sales once it goes over $1 billion.
Yep.
So like they must have been just like, you know, like waiting for that minute when it was like, oh, congratulations, it's gone over $1 billion, and all of a sudden they're just like, ha ha ha.
Yeah, so if it does another $1 billion,
they'll be good. And Harrison Ford got paid something like $25 million, plus he gets like 2%.
Oh yeah.
Of anything over a certain amount or something like that. It's like how much money do you need? But that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So we went and saw it, and what were your thoughts?
I liked it. It captured all the nostalgia that I wanted. I thought it was crisply directed. Let's see. The general feeling I had was that I was enjoying the movie and I wasn't being disappointed. But I'm very uncritical when I'm watching a movie for the first time.
So when you say enjoy, did you enjoy it in the same way that, like, because I bought it. We all got sucked into the hype when the prequels were coming out. And when episode one came out, like, we did the midnight. And was it different from that? Because, like, on the night of episode one, you get sucked into that whole environment of there's just all these Star Wars fans. And so everyone's
Star
like,
Wars,
yeah,
so
we're all cheering. And it comes up on the screen. And then you come out of the movie. And you're like, oh, my God, it was amazing. But then when you step back after a couple of weeks and you're like, wait a minute, you know what? Episode one really wasn't that good. And
we're kind of getting into that now. I was kind of fatigued going into it because there was so much Star Wars
stuff. I've never seen anything so cross-promoted anywhere. Everything. Like, you couldn't pick anything up without it having Star Wars. Like, oranges.
I made a comment on Twitter about that. It was becoming like pumpkin spice.
I
hate pumpkin spice.
I
hate all mentions of pumpkin spice.
It was
just because it keeps getting mentioned. And Star Wars was starting to hit that point. It was like, oh, come on.
Disney has mastered the ability to just integrate Star Wars into every lipstick colors and eyeshadow and automobiles and orange. Everything.
It's interesting to look at the U.S. patent trademark database online. I was looking at this a few weeks ago for some other project, like making some game or, you know, talking about making a game with someone. We were talking about marketing and stuff like this. Uh-huh. So we're just looking at like the Star Wars patented and trademark database. And they have everything that's ever been a product. So that's, you know, all the way back to 1977 or whenever it had come out. You know, there are things like, you know, pancake batter and, you know, so any use of a trademarked thing that was related to something was trademarked with respect to the particular product category it was with. So it was kind of a dizzying and somewhat like upsetting list of like, I think it was like over 1,000 different things, but it's got to be dwarfed by what's going on now.
Yeah. Yeah. This is crazy. It's just marketing everywhere.
So, like, I was thinking, like, there's sometimes I'll see a movie and I'll enjoy it. Like, we were just talking about that movie, that recent Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
I remember liking it when I watched it, but for the life of me, I can't remember what happened.
Yeah.
It's blurring together with the latest James Bond movie as well.
Yes.
And for the Star Wars movie, I guess not enough time has passed for that to happen, but I know there were, what I'm remembering from it is there's three specific moments in which like I almost lost it while I was watching it because I was like, you know, like so like drawn into
just it. Just sucked into it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we can talk about that a little bit later. Yeah. I know. So it's, I'll have to watch it again.
Right.
And see if my initial impressions like hold true.
I thought it was really good. I thought it was instantly better than any of the prequel Star Wars movies, which you kind of got to feel bad, just a little tinge of sadness for George Lucas, because, you know, like he's the guy that created this whole thing and he sold it to Disney a couple of years ago. And then, he's already gone on record as saying he basically wanted to sort of stand away from this new movie because they didn't go in the direction that he wanted them to go in and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And so the reviews for this new movie come out and like, instantly on Rotten Tomatoes, it's at like 97%. So it's like getting universal acclaim and all the reviewers love it and all the fans are freaking out. And practically in every review you read, the first thing that it says is, thank God George Lucas didn't touch this movie. So you kind of got to feel a little bad for George because it's like he's just kind of like, and
I saw some article online in which George Lucas is talking about, and he says like his zeal for the movie had somewhat diminished when people were saying things like, you know, the prequels raped my child, stuff like that. I mean, it's like people aren't so I can feel a little bit bad for him. I mean, like, you know,
it's amazing.
$4 billion of like from the sale of of Lucasfilm to Disney.
And now
makes
it
a little bit better.
Is he completely cut clean from that? Like, does he get any revenue from anything related to Star Wars that are new from Disney? Or
I don't know. It's a good question.
That's interesting. But I thought it was fantastic. You have to remember, like, this is...
Right, we need to keep this spoiler-free.
Right, yeah, I'm not going to get into intricacies and everything, but this is literally, like, this is home cooking the way your mother used to make it. So it's like, they pulled it out of the oven, and you're just sitting there in front of this movie screen for 2 hours, and it just... Yeah. It's like, it's comfort food. It's macaroni and cheese, just the way it used to be made when you were a kid, and that's exactly... Like, I have no problems with the fact that they have completely pandered to me as far as this movie. Like, they were
should
like
be more pandering to
right
me.
Like, we're gonna make a Star Wars movie and it's gonna take place 30 years after the original trilogy, and we're gonna hit every 30 to 45 year old that grew up with this movie and loved these characters, and we're gonna throw them on the screen. And it is, and it's like every time a character that you know from the original, you know, Han Solo comes on the screen and you're like, it's Han Solo, and he's old, but it's Han Solo. I don't care about that. Like, that's exactly what I wanted to see. That's exactly why, you know, like, I mean, I was reading somebody on Facebook had made a post and he was like, I have kids, and he's like, I wanted to see it before I had to deal with all kinds of screaming kids. And he's like, and I went to this like 9:30 a.m. show, and he's like, and the theater was filled with nothing but single dads. Like, just there was no kids. It was all just dads in this theater all watching the movie before they had to turn around and bring their kids in to see the movie later on at a later date or anything. And he's like, it was amazing. And that's awesome. Like, that's exactly who they're trying to, and they're it's working because they're, you know, they're already like at $1 billion in money. So I have no problem with the fact that it's completely fabricated to make money off of people of my age who want to exist on.
Well, I would say it's targeted at all ages, not specific, but it is.
But I mean, it's clearly, I think, you know, I mean, especially compared to how the people of our age have dumped on the prequels so badly. Yep. I think it was, you know, it was this, I mean, I don't know. I don't have a problem with that. I think it's fine.
It's like this movie's version of all ages is much different than the Phantom Menace's.
Right.
Well, I don't think the Phantom Menace, like the original prequels, like really tried to address older fan stuff.
No.
And
no.
You know, it makes me wonder if George Lucas even cared about that kind of thing.
I don't even know. Because, I mean, just when you think about it, like, the prequels were nothing but, you know, like, that whole Imperial trade. It was all this Trade Federation.
That's true. That is
stupid
weird.
Stupid stuff. And it's like, he keeps saying it was made for the kid, you know, it was made for the younger generation. And it's like, well, what younger generation is really interested in a bunch of, you know, stereotype Japanese characters talking about trade embargoes and all that? Well, what?
You know, it may be that there's a big difference between the way that George Lucas understands his childhood versus the way J.J. Abrams does.
Yeah.
You know, J.J. Abrams strikes me from the work that I've seen him be a part of. He's interested in how characters relate to each other and, like, the journey that they go through.
Yep.
On a deeper level than George Lucas does. Lucas, His way of engaging with people and characters in his movie treatments have tended to be, you know, not that.
They don't exist.
Yeah, it's been more like, well, here's all the cool stuff that, like, me as an introverted person would find interesting. And the fewer people that have to interact with each other, they're just kind of like the placeholders for these cool ideas.
Yeah, Lucas has always come across as a technical director and not like a people type thing, and they'll shoot, like, you know, you see all those interviews with the actors and everything, and they'll, you know, they keep saying, they're like, all he like, you'll do a take and then he's just like faster and more intense, that's his direction, you know. And then like Harrison Ford's gone on, there's a quote of Harrison Ford that goes around saying, like, he's, you know, he said, look, George, like, you can write this stuff but you can't act / speak it, like, it's just not I think Lucas is just he's a technically proficient director. I think he should be more of like a technical behind the scenes kind of thing rather than like somebody that's actually
But he also did have vision for the way he wanted the universe to feel, and that's like a big part of the original Star Wars. So what the movie he made in the 70s and 80s, he made them faster and more intense.
Faster and more intense.
The prequels.
That's right.
He just jammed more stuff into them.
Yep.
And it was stuff that would be wonderful for a nerd to like who was really into it to deconstruct and like make, you know, big maps of stuff and so forth. But it's not real watchable, I suppose. I mean, like the pod race, like in the sea, that was kind of interesting. The setup was kind of interesting, but we're really not. And I'd say, like, the prequels are enjoyable if you are watching them in machete order, editing out certain scenes, and you are reading between the lines.
Yeah.
If you're not reading between the lines, though, there's not a lot there to really hold you.
Yeah. But this was fantastic. I thought the characters were really good. The actors were really good. I thought
that was surprising.
Two and something out, you know, it was 2 hours and something minutes, and it moved along continuously. There wasn't too many lulls. I don't remember. We have to see it again.
One of the non-spoilery takeaways was, like, I was not expecting to, I wasn't even thinking about this. I wasn't expecting to find the new characters appealing to me.
Yeah.
And they were. And instantly I cared about them. Hmm. I'm trying to remember if I felt that way about. No, I did. About the movie. About the prequels. I mean, I kind of liked Queen Amidala because, like, she was just such an odd, like I was reading between the lines. Like, what kind of culture makes an elected queen?
Right.
What does that really mean? then she had all these fanciful outfits, and they changed each time. I thought that was kind of neat. But it wasn't because of the nature of what the character said or did.
No, 'cause she was like a robot.
Yeah.
You know, just the Trade Federation will not do it. Like, what's wrong with her?
Why is she?
What is wrong with her?
So, yeah, it didn't have, like, any of the, I suppose, the character depth or even the situational depth that would make that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jedi's hitting things with lightsabers was kind of cool. That was the first time we saw them in motion.
Yeah, the cool thing about the prequels was it was the first time that you saw two experienced choreographed sword fighters.
Yeah.
Which was good, but then like you have all these cool moves and stuff, and because you know, I mean, in the original three, you know, you've got basically just Luke just hacking at stuff because nobody taught him how to move fluid and everything.
Right.
So the prequels were cool in that you got very experienced swords people doing their Jedi, like this is the Jedi at their prime.
Yep.
The only thing that was dumb was just the swords, the battles in the prequels. They're just so long and drawn out. One of the things I always liked about Empire and Jedi is while they're fighting, they're working through their crap. Like they're talking, you know, like they're talking through it. Like they're fighting and there's a reason why they're fighting and they're trying to pontificate while they're fighting.
Yeah.
And that like that, you know, it works really well in Jedi, especially when like towards the end when Luke is hiding Vader's like, I'll go after your sister.
Yeah.
And in the prequels, like they're just hacking and slashing for like 20 minutes. And like, you know, like you get to the Revenge of the Sith, that's the third one. And it's finally, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi versus Anakin Skywalker. And you're like, oh, this is going to be a great big battle.
Yeah.
It's 30 minutes of them. Like it's a video game. Like at that point, like they're riding platforms on lava and they're like, but there's no talking at all. They're just slugging it out. You know, like, it's like, what's going on? It's just,
I have the high ground.
Yeah. It's like, talk about taking a really cool thing and just making it really boring.
The very last of the prequels, that was the one that felt the most like a movie to me. I mean, because like they'd built up enough stuff in the previous two. Like the finest acting moment in that movie is when Ewan McGregor says, "You were supposed to be the chosen one."
Yeah,
and like the look on his face was like it just you could kind of feel the
like what
the
happened,
hurt, the disappointment, you know, all this thing, and it was like. I think the movie that built up to this point, like, you know, he's there, he's, you know, like a spoiler alert, he's cutting down, like, the person that he's supposed to be trained from a small child. That's got to be, like, you know, again, reading between the lines, that should be devastating.
That, right. And it just, it missed the mark.
Yeah.
Anyways, we shouldn't keep talking about the prequels, but I thought it was really good. I was really happy with it. I thought it was shot really well. I was a little upset that we didn't get to see, like, the J.J. Abrams lens flare effect too much. Like I was kind of really hoping that every time you saw like a lightsaber go off, we would see lens flare.
Would be like,
that would be amazing,
and like people would be blinded.
So there wasn't that, but I thought structurally it was really good. I he's gone on record for saying just what an absolute like Star Wars nut he is.
Yeah,
and so like I think he did a good job considering. You know, it's a $1 billion franchise, and they want you to direct it, and it's like,
yeah.
And there was some parts that felt a little rushed. There was a little every once in a while, especially when they were trying to introduce things from the first three movies, the movies in the '70s and the '80s. Some of those things would just sort of show up, and they just felt a little like it just felt like a little, cameo. Not even a cameo. Just suddenly, you know, like. Like all of a sudden they're like, oh, there's the ship. Like it just sort of popped in. And even like when Han Solo shows up, some of it felt a little abrupt. Like they were like, okay, we've got to hit the marks. We've got to introduce Han Solo. We've got to introduce the Millennium Falcon. We've got to introduce Princess Leia. And just the way they kind of pop in, like they're just suddenly, I don't know. It was, and I suppose there's, I don't know how you would do that, especially within a two-hour movie.
Well, I kind of like it when they do that. One thing that was cool about Star Wars when it came out is it didn't explain anything that showed up.
You know what it felt like? It felt like every time a guest star would show up on The Muppet Show, and they'd come through the doors, and then all of a sudden they'd put in that canned audience track.
There were some shots like that with the old cast.
Yes.
You know, and I'm not going to say who, but they're like, yeah, yeah.
It felt a little, but I suppose when you've got this thing, the engines, the train's rolling down the tracks, and you've got it all unfolding, and the story is coming. You've got to introduce them somehow.
Right.
And you can't just, like, walk into a bar and have them all sitting around a table. So it's like, how do you...
You know, it may be one interesting thing is that these the older characters, the characters that we remember from the originals, you probably can't spend a lot of time introducing them if the point of the movie is to introduce the new characters.
Right.
That's something they deliberately did in this.
Yep. Yep.
To the story is about the new characters. It's the new generation. It's the handoff. It's not about the old characters.
No.
And so they just pop up.
They're
basically treated like structure, even though we know that it's who they are.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe that was the choice that they made.
Yeah. I mean, and so that's why I bought, like, I was like, eh, but it didn't bother me, you know, like to the point where I'm like, because it was like, it's Han Solo
yeah.
and all these people that show up and
yeah.
So I thought it, I need to see it again. We need to go and see it again. But I thought it was I thought it was very good. I'm very happy. It feels and that's for me. That's the most important thing. Is it feels like the original three movies. And I and it was nice to see practical effects. It was nice to see. You know, that's the one bad thing about the prequels was it was just almost completely CGI, and this actually felt grounded. You know, there was actual physical weight behind a lot of the stuff. So I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah. There was one spaceship scene that I didn't think that worked well in.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I have issues with spaceships because I spend way too much time thinking about how they should look. So I'm not going to say which one.
I love it. I loved it. And it's a welcome addition to the franchise. And
It does.
It leaves you, you know, at the end of this one, it leaves you caring about what's going to happen in the next two.
Yeah. You know, they did a good job setting up.
Yeah. They've got all this stuff. And it was a lot of stuff going on, too. There was a lot of stuff going on in the movie. So so they succeeded in that. You know, the prequels, you're just like, whatever.
Yeah.
If I have to see those stupid Chinese trade guys again, you know, like, really? I don't even care about them. But so it was good. I'm very happy. It was very exciting.
It was fun. It was also fun after the movie that I could finally go and read all those articles I've been like
yeah, all the spoiler stuff.
And you know, so all the questions, like, you had 21 questions about Star Wars that haven't been resolved.
Right.
Those kind of things.
Yep.
I was having a debate with one of my online game friends about it, and then we were just pointing. We would raise an issue, and then the other one would say, "Well, they showed the scene of it with this showing in it." So,
yeah.
And then where did this thing come from? That doesn't make any sense. It says, "Oh, there was a scene with it that was introduced, and this whole planet is like this."
Yeah.
And so that's maybe where that comes from. But but you know, so there's plenty to argue about until, I guess, in the next 2 years, did you say?
Yeah, there,
2018.
Yeah, so the good slash bad thing about Disney and the whole Star Wars franchise is every year now there's going to be a Star Wars thing. So we got episode 7 this year, 2015. Yep. 2016 at the end, in Christmas of 2016, we get a spin-off X-Wing movie about X-Wing pilots.
Huh.
And then we get episode 8 in May of 2017.
Oh, really? Okay, that's not too long.
And then the following year, there's another spinoff. And then, so the episode 7, 8, and 9, that's every other year. And then in between those years, they drop in these little sprinkly, you know, branch off expanded universe kind of stuff. And they're working on like a Boba Fett movie, and they're working on a young Han Solo. Welcome to my dyslexia. It finally came out on radio. You get to see, you know, like a young Han Solo movie that's supposed to be coming out and stuff. So the biggest concern I have is I don't want Disney to just kill it. Like, there's so much stuff coming out that you're just like, I'm sick of Star Wars because they've just completely saturated everything. So I'm hoping they don't get to that point where just, you know, like every time you turn around there's something Star Wars. And judging on the way that they're cross promoting the new movie with every you can buy oranges and there's BB-8 on the oranges. So it's like, stop. But BB-8 was awesome.
BB-8 is awesome.
I liked BB-8.
Yes.
And it was nice and it was good. And it's not really a spoiler. It was just one little effect that they did that I thought was really funny. The main character, Finn, is a stormtrooper. They established that in the trailer.
Yep.
What I liked is every time you see him and he takes his helmet off, he's just covered in sweat. And I just like the idea of stormtroopers are just these guys that are crammed in these suits that are just sweating profusely because I just love that idea.
Yeah.
And it was great. Every time he took the helmet off, his head is just drenched.
Yeah, you'd think those things would be air conditioned. I mean, I bet they are.
Awesome little effect. Like, just a little, you know, just like it is. It's like every time stormtroopers are just these sweaty dudes. And every time they take their outfits off, they're just covered in sweat because it's like plastic armor or whatever, and there's no room to breathe in.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny. And I could just see Abrams on set, you know, be like, no, just give him more sweat. Like, every time.
Yeah,
like,
more sweat.
Just these poor suffering dudes that just, you know, like, they don't even have names. They're just numbers.
Yeah.
Like, they take off their helmets and they're just covered in. I thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
That amused me.
Hmm.
Star Wars.
Yeah, it holds up. So, like, in the whole, we should have, like, some kind of board that awards points to J.J. Abrams and then...
J.J. Abrams.
Who was the other guy again? Oh, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name.
George Lucas?
No, not George Lucas. The other guy who is, like, contributing to our nerdy pleasures. you know, Firefly, Joss Whedon.
Oh, Joss Whedon.
I had to say Firefly before I could
he's
remember.
He's been kind of quiet recently.
Well, you know, he's only been rebuilding the entire Marvel expanded universe, like, yeah, for the past few years. Relaunched. He's the architect of a lot of that stuff, I understand.
Eh.
Yeah.
Eh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So maybe he'll get back to Firefly, which I just rewatched for Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went blew through the all 14 episodes that are available.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen rewatched the movie yet, but it held up. I wasn't expecting it to.
Yeah.
I was thinking like, yeah, it's gonna feel like kind of like a low rent like thing now or something like that. And yeah, I guess there's parts of it to do, but the cast is so good. And the pilot, the setup is so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. And like by the time I get to the last episode, which is Objects in Space, I said, yep, this is an amazing, yep, episode.
Oh, that's with Jubal Early.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, that's like an amazing episode. It pulls together all these different threads from, yep, like the development of like all the characters, and it's like, oh, and then it was the last one. I was like, this is terrible.
It's too bad that you see, you know, like the Mystery Science Theater Kickstarter that just happened,
yep,
which,
yep,
made, like, they're going to do a full season now, and it's made the most money ever of any Kickstarter or whatever.
Yep, good.
You would, it's like, you just kind of hope that Joss would want to do that. Cause you know, if he went to Kickstarter and said, look, we want to do 12 episodes of Firefly, we can get, yeah, all the original cast. Yeah. All we need is the fun. Like, he wouldn't even finish what he's the sentence, and they would have all the money. It would instantly be funded.
30 minutes that bring the full curve.
Yeah. And you know, you can see it because like Alan Tudyk did that con, yep, man thing, and like, yep, that was funded instantly.
Yeah.
So it's just, and I know Joss keeps going on record saying is, you know, like he didn't want to do another serialized show because he's been abused too many times from networks and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah, he could do it.
You like there's, he, you know, or even go to like Netflix or, you know, like one of those, because they took over Arrested Development. The possibility is there. And I don't know if it's just a matter of if he's just really that sad by how it was treated it would be there. Like, his audience would be there to fund that.
It may be that he's at the point now that what is there left?
Right.
I mean, like, yeah, I guess he was a huge comic book fan, right? Or he is a huge comic book fan. Yeah, so being able to, you know, pull together this giant franchise and have his fingers in every aspect of it,
yeah,
you know, like, at least in the movieverse part of things.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. Like, it's great that he has all the movies and everything, but if I think about, you know,
I mean, like,
what I think it's really good that he's done, it's not Avengers. Yeah. Like, Avengers is cool, but...
Yeah, it's not like... Yeah, the ones that
it's
are probably Malcolm closest Reynolds to every, yeah, it's like
it's not Niska. It's not,
yeah. Yeah. Who was the actor who played Niska? That guy's amazing.
Reynolds. Like,
yeah, they had the casting was so good. In,
yeah,
that.
Yeah. But, we haven't watched it in a while.
When was the last time? A year ago? 2 years?
No,
ago?
No, it's been
years?
A while. I did that with Cowboy Bebop because that was really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
And I watched it so many times, like close to one another, that like I picked up the Blu-ray set.
Oh yeah.
And I can't even watch it now because it's just too, like, I know everything too well, and I don't I want to wait a while so that when I'm watching them now, it doesn't feel like I just watch this. Like, what, you know, like I don't know. And that's, yeah, like that. You got to sort of space it out a little bit.
I hate to say it, but it doesn't quite hold up for me anymore.
Bebop?
Cowboy Bebop.
Really?
Just because the pacing is like so... I would say the first 10 or so episodes, you know, like are really slow moving, I think.
Huh.
There was like the first episode where that other guy comes in, like the guy he used to work with.
Jet?
No, isn't Jet his partner?
Yeah.
No, but there's like some guy from Spike's past.
Oh, Vicious.
Vicious, yeah. When that arc starts ticking off, then it starts going. That's when, I think the series starts.
Yeah, when the underlying story, yeah.
Right. And then after that, like, there's a few just amazing episodes, like that that one with the assassin and the hat, the LeFou one or something.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That. That's incredible. Pierre LeFou. The direction of that's amazing.
The carnival one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, that was like, wow.
Yep.
And then there were a few episodes in which Valentine is exploring her
backstory.
Her backstory. And that was like a really touching episode. And then the rest of it's like great. But leading up to it, you know, there's, It's a little bit slow when Ed shows up too. That starts adding.
Yeah,
when the whole cast comes together. But I think it takes about 10 episodes for it to really start.
I think
moving.
Yeah, Ed shows up around episode 9 or something like that.
Yeah,
and so, it is. It's kind of like the X-Files, where you've got the individual stories sometimes that were really good, but then when you get to the Black Oil stuff in X-Files, which was that underlying cohesive story that sort of they spread out. And that's the same thing with Bebop. Like, you've got the whole syndicate thing, which is basically Spike's past, but this whole underlying story that by the end of the series, that's what the whole story was about.
So it's good. Yeah, it's still pretty good. It has been a while since I watched it. The last time we watched it was probably like 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's surprising though, the Ghost in the Shell reboot. Like, the movie that came out in November. Called Ghost in the Shell, the new movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's based on a reboot of the whole Ghost in the Shell series called Arise. I don't know if we've talked about that before, but they made 4 movies, or like 4, I think, direct-to-video movies. It's like they were doing a series, but they broke it up into 4 movie-length chunks.
Okay.
And they released, I think they did release them in the theaters in Japan.
Huh.
And so this takes place before the events of Ghost in the Shell, the manga, or even before the events in Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex.
Okay.
Season 1, which is the anime series. Yeah. I actually like Gitsack 1, especially Gitsack Season 2 I really liked.
Yeah.
And so Arise, like, people were going like, oh, the new character design, so the major looks different. It's before she became the major. She's just like, it's cadet or something like that. It graduates. And it's kind of like, yeah, this isn't the Ghost in the Shell I remember. It's rebooted and it's re-character designed for a new generation. It seems to have that style again.
Yeah.
Like a style that's like not what I guess we grew up with. Like, I guess. But by the time the movie rolls out, like The Rise, Border 1, they call each individual film a border.
Okay.
Border 1, Border 2, Border 3, Border 4. It does a retelling of like how the whole whole crew comes together. And you see them when the major, Motoko, is not really fully her own yet, I suppose.
Okay.
This is way before Section 9 starts. But by the end of the movie, which I watched, which actually it's probably my favorite Ghost in the Shell movie ever. I didn't like the original Ghost in the Shell movie because of the deviation from the original manga presentation.
Yep.
Which is why I like the Ghost in the Shell TV series better.
Yep.
By the time the movie is over, it kind of comes full circle, and I just sort of, it's knocked me on my ass. Huh. It's also happy about it.
I'm looking at some screenshots. Yeah, the character design is different from what I'm used to seeing.
You're thinking like, I'm not going to like this, but it's actually, you know, some people have said the new movie is unwatchable. And it probably is if you don't have the deep familiarity with the whole Ghost in the Shell universe,
mm-hmm.
and also with just the way like Masamune Shirow has done his action cyber movie stuff.
Yeah,
like, you know, since the concepts, I should say, you know, since all the way back in 84 or 85, something like that, which is when I got into it. But as a fan, liked it a lot.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I just remember trying to watch, was it the Ghost in the Shell 2.0, like the original movie, and they CG'd all the special effects on it. I think I got through like the first 15 minutes, and I was like, I can't even deal with this. Like, this is just terrible.
Yeah.
Like, they took the original movie, but then they put this layer of CG effect over it. It was weird. It was just weird. It was really weird.
Mm.
But.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think the movie has aged well. Yeah. It's also just really... I don't know. My impression of the Ghost in the Shell movie is it was trying to be profound,
Yep.
But that's how apparently the director Oshii he tends to roll that way. I guess that was what was interesting to him about it. Whereas like I was still like, there's like cool cyber robot stuff with guns running around solving crimes and shooting people.
Huh.
I guess I've matured a little bit since then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, Christmas. Getting away from Star Wars. Did you have a good Christmas?
I did have a good Christmas.
Yes.
My sister came up with her boyfriend and her cat,
How does the cat adjust when they bring her up?
The cat's pretty much used to it by now. So they bring the cat in the carrier, and then they just keep her in their bedroom.
Okay.
The doors just close, and she has her own litter box. And
good.
She seems fine. Yep.
Good.
But yeah, so how was yours?
It was good. It was, I mean, it's every year, it's, you know, you don't actually get to, like, relax. It's going to different family members and all that kind of stuff. But it was good. We had our yearly, we got up, and this year, we have kittens, so that's been interesting, because they're all like, oh, what's all this paper that we can just shred through? And so they helped us with recycling the paper as we were unwrapping presents and stuff. Mm-hmm. And but it's good. We get up, and our yearly thing is we get up, and we make coffee, and then we have a pound of bacon.
Oh, I did that this year. I remember.
Did you?
Your tradition, so I did the same thing.
We cook the bacon, and then we just sit there, and we eat a giant thing of bacon on a plate, and then we open gifts, and then after we do the home stuff, then we have to do all the parents and everything. But it was good. It was nice. Sarah bought me a, I showed her this, they make hammocks now out of like the parachute material.
Oh, wow.
And it's really strong, but it's really lightweight. And nice. So I kept showing her, because we go up to, with friends up way up north in the summer. I was like, oh, it'd be kind of cool if we had a little hammock, that way we could just hang it and stuff like that. So she got me one of those, which is, I'm excited to try it out. Holds two people.
Nice.
So we can do a little cuddly sexy hammock thing. Yeah. and it was mostly just movies, like, you know, like the Mission Impossible. We got the Mission Impossible Blu-ray set, like all the movies, including the new one. And
does Sarah like those?
And she does, but she kind of it's kind of like what you said. Like, she's, you know, she's like, there's so many different James Bond style movies out now, as opposed to when there was just James Bond movies. But now it's like all the Bourne movies, and you've got all the Mission Impossible movies, and
yeah,
just like, so that action espionage thing, there's just an over. So she liked it, but a lot of times she's just like, I can't remember what I just saw. You know,
they all kind of blur together, don't they?
They do. I like them. It's the the first one was okay. The second one was absolute trash, and that's the only one. The second one was that John Woo one, where like half the movie was done in slow motion. And I keep telling Sarah, like, you have to see it, just because it's so tragically bad. And it's the only one she hasn't seen yet. So at some point we're going to have to just sit down and be like, all right, we got to get through this.
Like, but taking her medicine.
But one and two were okay, but I never really got into Mission Impossible stuff until the third one, which was the J.J. Abrams one.
Produced, right?
Oh, no, he directed it. Yeah, I think that was his first film that he directed, first theatrical feature.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that one was good, and then the one after it was directed by Brad Bird, which was his first live action one. And then this one was really good. So
who directed this last one?
The guys, what was his name? Christopher McQuarrie? I think it's something like that. He did, there was a movie that came out in the late 90s called Year of the Gun, Way of the Gun, that he did.
Oh, I remember seeing that.
And
I'm thinking of something else.
He did something else, and I can't remember. I think he's used to be a script writer or something like that, and then he started wanting to direct movies. But it was actually really good. And it was kind of cool too, because it was the first Mission Impossible where it had a really strong female character, and it came out right around the same time that the Mad Max Fury Road came out, which also had a really strong female character. So there was this little point during the summer where these movies were coming out that had really kick butt strong female leads, and I thought that was kind of cool. But she did a really good job. I was really impressed.
Yeah,
and
I'm trying to remember,
she was so popular that they're going to bring her back for the next one that they're going to start filming next year.
I'm trying to remember who it was. I saw this on the plane to Taiwan.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, this is surprisingly good.
Yeah.
But I don't remember anything that happened. Because it keeps getting overwritten by the last James Bond movie I saw.
Yes, and we did see that. We did go see the Spectre. We saw that a little while ago. What were your thoughts on that?
I was a little disappointed.
I think I am completely in love with Daniel Craig as Bond. I think
he's good.
I think he's my favorite Bond. I always loved, even from the first one, like, I love the fact that instead of this tall, sophisticated dude, he's like a little pug dog.
Yeah, he's a thug.
And he's like he's a brawler. Like, you just look at his face and he just wants to punch.
Yeah.
So I like that. And he's over the last four movies, like, I don't know, I just think he's really good.
Yeah.
This was the first Bond movie where I really felt like everybody was literally just going through the motions. Like, they were just it's another Bond movie, and we've got to have this, and he's got to say this, and he's got to have that look, and he's got to punch somebody, and then he's got to, like, straighten his tie after he punches them.
Yep.
It just, like, I don't know. And Sarah was saying that this was his last movie.
Yeah,
and so it felt, and she said he's like, in interviews, he said he didn't want to do another one. And it kind of felt like there was something a little off about his performance in this.
Yeah, the impression that I have, and I'm not sure how justifiable this is that the director Mendez, who everyone seems to love, like he shoots good travel videos, you know, or travel movies. Like, here's a beautifully, you know, lit and composed outdoor scene in some interesting city, right? So the scouting is good. The like that. There's this opening scene in Spectre in which, I guess it's supposed to be like a Day of the Dead celebration in some city.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm thinking this looks like the most beautifully coordinated wedding that I've seen on film, because it looks like that. It's like there's thousands of people at a wedding because everyone is color coordinated, their suits and their costumes. And I thought it was like some sort of special thing, but it was supposed to read as, here is an exotic celebration in some Latin country, in which they're celebrating the Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
And then there's people running through it.
So they're almost shot too well.
Yeah. And the previous movie also, I remember just being distracted by how good-looking the motorcycle stunts were filmed.
Yeah.
Like, there's this one, they're driving a motorcycle along some wall, and there's, like, this desert in the background, and, like, the sun-washed old buildings. This is, like, out of National Geographic. But something, and so, It's so good looking that, like, I get distracted by it, and it's not like, oh, this guy's trying to kill the other guy.
Right.
But let's enjoy the scenery for a moment first.
It's so pretty.
Yeah, it's pretty. And I don't think that the way that characters are portrayed are particularly interesting. I think one thing I really like the first Daniel Craig one, the Casino Royale. Because there's so little action happening, it's all inside the head. And some people don't like it because of that.
Yep.
But there's a lot, you're unpacking each character that's as they're interacting. Yep. I think the last bit of the movie kind of falls apart. That tightness is gone.
Okay.
But the overall, just representation and, like, breaking all the expectations.
Yep.
So it has a special place in my heart, especially that first conversation between Bond and Vesper. You know, they're on the train and they're just going.
Yes.
That's an amazing. I love that scene so much.
She's breaking them down. Yep.
Yeah. And they're trying to break down each other. And it's just so. There was a scene like that in the most recent movie, but it didn't quite hold up to it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
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 That's too bad, because it seemed like he was. But it was good. I mean, it was entertaining. Like, well, I don't even remember what happened. I remember the ending being really a letdown. Like, it was kind of a dud. It was like, that's the big ending. That's the big reveal. There's no action scene or anything.
I'm mixing it up also with that recent Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, that was disappointing too.
Was it?
Yeah,
I heard it looked really good. Like,
looked good.
Like all this, because it takes place in the 60s or something like that. So like
that
it's all 60 related set pieces and everything.
Yeah,
and fashion and stuff and all mod and
It was maybe a little too clean looking.
Yeah,
but we should see it and you'll tell me what you think.
Yeah.
So, what else did I get? What else for Christmas? What did I get? Let me check my notes. My sister gave me, or my sister and her boyfriend gave me. Some new coasters, some trendy t-shirts, of which I'm wearing one with a robot fighting
robot versus
a dinosaur,
dinosaurs.
Which is pretty awesome. They give me cool t-shirts. All the cool t-shirts I have are from them, basically. The ones that I get aren't nearly as cool. Except for that that Zen Totoro one. I thought that was cool.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Also, the book 101 Asian Recipes, that new one from Lucky Peach, that cooking magazine I like a lot. Something called 1,000 Essential Recordings to Listen to Before You Die. Have you ever heard of this book?
No.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting. It'll be a good thing to put in the living room cafe for seeing if people just sort of work through or look through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Potato Masher, Luck Charm, new pullover, new sweater. Then the things that I also get a lot of things for myself. Like the 3D printer came in. I kickstarted that a year and a half ago.
So how large of things can you make with that?
4 by 5 by 6 inches.
Okay.
And a new 12-inch frying pan and a new camera bag, which I guess we'll talll talk about next time.
Yeah.
But, See, I told you, Star Wars was going to
take up the whole thing. Movies,
So, yeah.
Awesome.
Now
we'll have to talk about all this. Yeah. Well, I guess that'll wrap it up and for our special Star Wars edition. Happy New Year. Because we won't be back in probably till 2016.
Yep. So
enjoy your new year. Until next time, this is Photographer Sid Caesar.
And Designer Dave Say.
And everybody have a good New Year's.
Woo. Yeah.
Celebrate New Year's. Music provided by Michael Bellar and the As Is Ensemble. Visit him at michaelbellar.com. Shout out to Michael if he listens to what's up. Everybody have a good New Year. Celebrate.
I saw Kenta Koga's brother G at Hannaford.
Oh, you did?
Yep.
Shout out to Kenta Koga and Kenta Koga's brother.
Be real.
Kenta Koga's brother. All right, go see Star Wars again.
Yes.
Feed into that $1 billion franchise.
Feed them.
Feed them.
Bye.
Star Wars.